It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
If you're bleeding, don't stop the bleeding. If you need an x-ray, you're going to have to wait. That's just, and all of these costs keep going up. Nobody wants to pay any more money. And at the rate we're going, healthcare is going to bankrupt us. So not only do we have a problem, it's going to bankrupt us. And we've got to sit here and say which things we're going to do and which things we're not. Nobody wants to do that. You know, if you show up with prostate cancer and you're 95 years old, you should say, go and enjoy, have an ice cream, live a long life. There's no cure, and you can't do it. If you're a young person, we should do something about it.
So that was Mike Bloomberg in another undiscovered video. Basically, he's saying really what's true, that socialized medicine, government medicine, the rising cost of government trying to pay for your health care through tax dollars is untenable. And so basically, if you are old and you get cancer, just go and enjoy what you have left. We can't do anything about it. That's basically what Mike Bloomberg is saying, which, by the way, just this morning or as of last night late, has qualified for that debate in Las Vegas, which takes place tomorrow night, Wednesday, between the Democratic challengers. Now, this is getting interesting. This is one you might want to tune in for because things are really firing between Bernie Sanders and Mike Bloomberg, who is now behind Bernie Sanders. I don't know by how many points, but because of his $400 million expenditure, Mike Bloomberg's, on commercials, he has moved up to the second spot behind Bernie Sanders. So it's going to be pretty interesting. They're pretty fired up and pretty angry. We'll see how he does in the debate. We heard yesterday Mike Bloomberg's comments about farming. In fact, I'm not going to replay it. I'll just say he was talking to a group of people, and he basically said, I could even teach you how to be farmers. You know, you just drop the seed in the ground, you add water, and things grow. Anybody can be a farmer. I can teach you how to be a farmer. Manufacturing, you stick this pipe in, you turn this. What really takes gray matter is technology. People who do technology, they're the ones that have to have gray matter. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but that is what he said. So it's obvious that Mike Bloomberg, many people are talking about his statements about race. I think the overall theme is that he is a very arrogant man who does not have a lot of empathy for regular people and certainly a lack of understanding and ignorance. I still love Britt Hume's tweet where he said Mike Bloomberg must have learned what he knows about farming from watching Hee-Haw because that's just stupid. That is ignorance, to think that farming, you can just plant a seed, throw a seed in the ground and it grows. I think of the farmers that I've known, you know, even before farming has been sophisticated for a very long time. But even so, before that took place, you know, understanding the seasons, understanding how plants grow, how they have to be cared for. How stupid of Mike Bloomberg. I'm just saying. The gray matter for him in terms of comprehending what farmers actually do is notably missing. And so he's going to be on the stage Wednesday night, and it will be interesting to see, you know, what he's really like. By the way, Mike Pence responded to Bloomberg's comments about farmers by playing. I wish we had time to play this because I have heard this before. It's a famous speech by Paul Harvey, the famous commentator, radio commentator, who was just a household name for generations. Paul Harvey actually was from Chicago, and he used to attend a church where I sang frequently. It's a long story, but Paul Harvey was just a real... What a great, and that's the way it is today. This is Paul Harvey. I can't talk like he does, but he was just marvelous. If you haven't heard him, you know, Google something. In fact, we'll put this on our Facebook page. He, in 1978, did a speech to the Rams Truck Super Bowl. And it's audio. Actually, no, I'm sorry. His speech was in 1978, and he was, I don't know who he was speaking to. It doesn't say, but it was a speech called So God Made Me a Farmer. And it starts out, and on the eighth day, God looked down on his planned paradise and said, I need a caretaker. So God made me a farmer. That's not very poor Paul Harvey imitation, but you have to listen to it. We'll put it on our Facebook page and you can see. That's how Mike Pence responded, and it was great. Great idea. By the way, Pete Buttigieg is busy speaking. He has a lot of things to say. He was speaking at a Planned Parenthood campaign event in Nevada on Sunday where a woman shared the story of having an abortion in college and how she struggled after being criticized and ridiculed. And his response to it was, what a reminder it is of how we are all lifted up when we honor individual freedom and support. He promised that his health care plan would support, reimburse, and fund abortion and family planning. And, of course, he talks regularly about how he supports unrestricted abortion for any reason for all 9 months. And so he's weighing in. By the way, another story that you just have to hear, Nancy Pelosi, I played a bit of this interview with Christiana Lamanpour on Sunday, but I didn't hear this part. And I want you to hear it because it just came to my attention last night. So let's listen. This is Nancy Pelosi to Christiana Lamanpour.
What about, though, the fact that the president seems liberated? And this is about Democratic politics, so I'm not asking you to criticize here. But he was acquitted. His poll ratings are high.
There was no acquittal. You can't have an acquittal unless you have a trial. And you can't have a trial when you have witnesses and documents. So he can say he's acquitted, and the headlines can say acquitted. But he's impeached forever, branded with that, and not vindicated. And even the senators were saying, yes, it wasn't right. But they didn't have the courage to act upon that.
Except for?
So Nancy Pelosi, according to her, in spite of what you saw with your own eyes, he has not been acquitted. There was not a real trial. He has not been acquitted. He is impeached, and that will be forever. He'll be ever be labeled. He wasn't acquitted. What a liar. And she's saying it all. She looked beautiful, by the way. She must have had some freshening. She looked great. She's smiling. He wasn't acquitted. He wasn't acquitted. He'll be impeached forever. That's Nancy Pelosi, sweet Nancy Pelosi. She has a challenger out in San Francisco named John Dennis. He's the chairman of the San Francisco Republican Party. And he was out cleaning up the streets in San Francisco probably a week ago. This came to my attention. Maybe over the weekend. I honestly can't remember. But he was on with Laura Ingraham last night. First of all, I want you to hear the video of what happened when he was out cleaning the streets in San Francisco. The Antifa group came out to visit with him, and one of the big dudes, had a lot of things to say. Let's listen to clip 13.
I'm going to catch you when all the cameras aren't around, and I'm going to f*** you up.
Oh, you're fine.
No, I am.
No, you've got the wrong guy.
No.
You've got the very wrong guy. Why are you so angry? I don't understand. I'm just here chatting with you. Why are you angry, man? Because here's the thing. You probably disagree with me, but I disagree with you.
No, I actually want you there.
But why?
Because you're a piece of
what?
Because you're racist.
How do you know? You don't know one thing about me. I go to the public house. I go to the public housing project.
I can tell by looking at you.
I've lived here for 30 years. I'm not so sure how long you've lived here. Well, I'm here 30 years. I'm the guy. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. I got my family.
So
you
go.
You can't keep moving from four people out.
I'm going to catch you when all the cameras aren't around, and I'm going to f*** you up.
Yeah, so I don't know if you heard all of that, but basically it went like this. John Dennis, who's again challenging Nancy Pelosi, said, why are you angry, man? You probably disagree with me, but I disagree with you. No, I actually want you dead. The man then called Dennis a piece of blank and a racist. How do you know? You don't know a thing about me, Dennis responded. I grew up in a public housing project. I'm sure you did, the man said. Wherever you grew up, you should go back there because we don't want you here in San Francisco. I'm actually going to catch you when all the cameras aren't around, and I'm going to blank you up. So that's how the conversation went. Well, Dennis was on with Laura Ingraham last night, and he had more to say in explanation. Let's listen.
When I went up to talk to him, there was chaos going on, but he was the alpha male. He was doing all kinds of vulgar gestures to suburban moms who came in to clean up San Francisco. And he was also threatening every guy he could find in the crowd. So I wanted to go up and just defuse the situation with him.
Mm.
And he got very aggressive, and he said, I want you dead, which I thought was a nice icebreaker. And I want to kind of jump ahead a little bit here, Laura, if you don't mind, because, this stuff has been going on forever. I mean, I've been watching these videos of Antifa attacking people for years. And for years, I've been saying the same thing that you said in your tweet when you put that out there the other day. And thank you, by the way, for retweeting it. Where is Nancy Pelosi in all this? The people on the left, and this is largely left-driven driven violence, where is Nancy Pelosi? Where's Chuck Schumer? Where's Bernie Sanders? Where are all the presidential candidates? Where's AOC in all this business?
Yeah, good question. And that reminds me of a segment I never got to this week. Well, this is we are having increasing amount of attacks on Trump supporters. This was an example. I want to throw in clip 15. This is the Arizona University. A student coming by a Republican booth, and this is what it sounded like. Clip 15.
Slash his throat! Say that. Every Republican! Say that. Suck my balls!
Say that one more time.
Slash Republican throat! Slash fascist throat! Death to fascists!
Have a good one.
Yeah, slash Republican throat, slash the fascist. That's a student, two other Republican students. This, we can laugh about it, but it's getting increasingly dangerous and pretty horrifying, isn't it? These people are walking around the streets and don't think they wouldn't do exactly what they're threatening to do if they get the chance. Well, Nancy Pelosi is a great challenger. He's got a lot of courage. We'll put that video, by the way, on our Facebook page so you can see. Coming up next, oh, wow, lots of stuff. Steve Moore will join us. Don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming fast, and we still have a few spaces left.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming to Pine Cove Camp near Tyler, Texas, March 31st through April the 2nd. The retreat is 3 days of relaxation and encouragement for pastors and their wives. It's a chance to address the challenges which are unique to a pastor's family. Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring the Word on AFR and his wife Jan will host the event. Our special speaker will be Dan Celia of Financial Issues, and it happens midweek, so you won't even need to miss a Sunday service. Materials, meals, and lodging are included in the cost of registration. But hurry, space is limited to just 30 couples. Learn more and register at repairingthefoundations.net. That's repairingthefoundations.net. Or call 662-844-5036, extension 300.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat.
We'll see you there.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Thomas J. Walters, Director of the Federal Law Enforcement Training Centers. Mr. Walters helps move forward the department's mission of working to train those who protect our homeland. Hebrews 13:6 reminds us of God's protection. So we may boldly say, "The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me?" Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask for guidance for Thomas J. Walters as he works to protect our people and our country. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
From Thinking Man Films comes Patterns of Evidence, The Red Sea Miracle. For nearly two decades, investigative filmmaker Timothy Mahoney has been searching for evidence of one of the Bible's most epic miracles, the parting of the Red Sea.
We're talking about a miraculous event of unprecedented proportion, of God's saving power.
The Red Sea Miracle, Part 1, in theaters for one day only on February 18th. More information is available at patternsofevidence.com/Red Sea.
President Trump's appearance at the Daytona 500 was one for the history books. An Air Force One flyover, a lap around the speedway in the Beast. It was more than many in the never Trump world could handle. So why did so many Democrats and news reporters break out into a flop sweat over the president's visit to the great American race? Could it be the invocation by the Baptist preacher who prayed in the name of Jesus? Or was it the fact that no one took a knee during the singing of the national anthem? Or maybe, just maybe, it was because NASCAR really does represent God, country, and family, and fast cars. I contend the reason why Democrats and the mainstream media suffered a sudden onset of Trump derangement syndrome is because NASCAR values are the antithesis of everything the leftists stand for. The president's lap around the Daytona International Speedway was a victory lap for gun-toting, Bible-clinging, flag-waving patriots. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
My economic team, which I'm going to be meeting with today, is helping to shape what is going to be a bold agenda to create 2.5 million new jobs, to start helping states and local governments with shovel-ready projects.
If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
That was President Barack Obama. Remember him? Well, he remembers him because yesterday he tweeted that 11 years ago today, meaning yesterday, near the bottom of the worst recession in generations, I signed the Recovery Act, paving the way for more than a decade of economic growth and the longest streak of job creation in American history. And so with that, like, tweet and smile of the face, he's claiming victory. He's claiming that he is responsible for the economy, the jobs market that's better than it has been maybe ever for some particular groups, especially minorities, the stock market, all of it. Interestingly enough, though, when we think back on President Obama and what happened with the economy, I sort of remember, as I've mentioned several times, driving through Ohio, western Pennsylvania, northwest Indiana, on my way back to Chicago, and seeing like boarded up businesses, even a Burger King with one little section still remaining, the rest of it like boarded up because they didn't have enough business. Just depressing beyond measure. And I remember President Obama saying something like this, clip 10.
So what we have to do is to make sure that folks are trained for the jobs that are coming in now, because some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back. And when somebody says, like the person you just mentioned, who I'm not going to advertise for, that he's going to bring all these jobs back, well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have? And usually the answer is he doesn't have an answer. But I got to tell you that the days when you just being willing to work hard, and you can now walk into a plant and suddenly there's going to be a job for you for 30 years or 40 years, that's just not going to be there for our kids.
Well, thank you, President Obama. That was an optimistic little report. And he was, of course, responding to President Trump's promise that he would bring jobs back and bring factories back to America. To President Obama, it was fantasy. To President Trump, it was reality. All right, enough of me. I want to introduce someone who worked with the president as his senior advisor in economics. He's also a fellow at the Heritage Foundation and a friend of mine from Chicago, Stephen Moore. Thanks, Steve, for joining us this morning.
Hi, good morning.
Okay, I think maybe you might have something to say about President Obama taking a victory lap for the economy. Is he responsible, Steve, for this economy?
Well, look, I mean, the fact is, first of all, we should all celebrate the fact that this is now 11 years since the recession ended. I think that is the longest recovery that we've had, since the end of World War II. So that's a very positive thing. The economy, you know, it's interesting that President Obama mentioned the stimulus plan, remember the shovel-ready projects, because that didn't work very well. In fact, his own numbers show that we probably would have more jobs if we hadn't, you know, spent and borrowed that $800 billion than we did. And look, I was one of these people when I was working for Donald Trump back in 2016 who basically told him, and he got this, that we could do much, much better, that the economy could, if you unleashed the economy, got rid of the taxes, the regulations, the restrictions on American energy, that we could grow, faster, we could create more jobs, and that has happened. So, look, Obama does deserve some of the credit, but the fact is the economy has really accelerated under Trump. I mean, it's like comparing, driving in a Corvair versus a Ferrari. I mean, our economy is doing so well right now. Almost every statistic shows vast, vast improvement in the economy. And by the way, everyone, I used to debate all these Obama economists who would say, Trump is going to cause a second Great Depression. Remember that, Sandy?
He's going to
destroy the economy. Now
yes,
we have the
I
best
do.
Economy, in 50 years, and the liberals are trying to explain how it is that this president was going to destroy the economy has given us the lowest unemployment, lowest inflation, lowest interest rates, and the biggest wage gains in 30 to 40 to 50 years.
Hey, Steve, just a couple of practical questions for my own curiosity. With that stimulus plan and the shovel-ready jobs, so-called, that didn't really pan out, actually. He laughed about it later. He said, well, turns out the shovels weren't ready or something. He laughed about it. So $800 billion pumped into the economy while the feds are busy printing money like crazy. I'm just curious about, was that the genesis of the trillions and trillions of dollars of debt that we find ourselves in now?
Yeah, so what happened was that there was this kind of mistaken belief by liberals that you could generate more economic growth by just having government spend more money. And that was proven false under Obama because actually, the unemployment rate continued to rise even as we were spending all of this money. And remember, a lot of the money didn't go for shovel-ready projects. A lot of the money went for things like, unemployment benefits and food stamps and welfare programs. I could never quite understand how giving people, more welfare was going to create more jobs. I mean, that was something that just made no sense, right? It was a foolish idea. The other thing that happened, by the way, in the last 10 years that needs to be celebrated, that's kind of separate from politics, but it's relevant to where we are in the debate today. I really tell you why we had this 10-year, now 11-year boom in four words. You know what those are?
Nope.
Shale, what? Oil, and gas.
Oh,
we
yes.
became an energy powerhouse because of fracking and horizontal drilling. Yeah. We went from, importing $200 billion a year of energy every year to now exporting $200 billion a year. We're now the number one producer of oil and gas. It is the most wonderful thing. And I say that, Sandy, because I listen to, Bloomberg and Joe Biden and, Bernie Sanders. They say the first thing they're going to do is destroy our oil and gas industry. I mean, can you imagine anything stupider than that?
No, I can't. I mean, it really does defy logic, except, Steve, I guess, without getting into off the track here, one thing I've learned through the years being like having a PhD in news now after all these years is that the left, it isn't about building, it's about destroying. And once I finally understood that, it was a deconstructing of something that worked so that they could gain power, then it all, the destructive moves made more sense to me. And so I think the economics is just another track on that. And, it's funny
let me
you
just
mentioned.
I have one quick thing. That's what Trump did, I think, that was so effective is he cut taxes, he reduced regulation, he promoted American energy, and there was this burst of optimism, right? Literally 24 hours after he was elected, you could see it in consumer confidence, you could see it in small business confidence. He was, we put in office a pro business president, and that has made all the difference. It's why I think, I have to get off in a minute, but this boom that we're talking about, Sandy, I believe this will last another 5 years because I think the American people in their wisdom will reelect Donald Trump, and we're going to continue to just plow ahead with these pro-growth policies.
Okay, I have one more quick question before we talk about you want to talk about the president's budget, and I do too, but I don't know if I've ever asked you this, Steve, and I don't know what your thoughts are about. Surely I must have in all these years, but do you believe that that financial crisis that came upon us right before the election of 2007, the November 2007, or it's happened in September, do you think there was any manufacturing going on in creating that crisis?
I'm not sure I follow your question.
The day that the market fell and all hell broke loose right before the election of the fall of 2007, does any part of you believe that that was created problem?
No. Well, look, it was mainly because we had pumped all this money into the financial markets. There was a bubble in the housing market, and we don't have a housing bubble today. We're booming with housing and manufacturing. All those blue collar jobs are back. Sandy, I apologize. I have to go, but it's great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Oh, Steve, I thought you had till 8:35. All right. Well, nice having... That's weird. That's weird. Okay. They told me 8:35, and here it is. 8:30, not quite. We'll fix that in the future. But anyway, so I have other people that I've talked to that actually think there was something going on in that crisis right before the election of November. I remember it happened on my birthday. My father was actually near death, and I was in Phoenix watching the news. I'll never forget that. And I did, in the ensuing years, I've talked to several experts about that who think that there was something. Why would we not believe that? You know, why would we not believe that people like George Soros, who had already tanked the economies? Now, I'm not saying it's George. I'm saying like somebody like, could have been him. I don't know. Would not have some way to mess with all of this trading that takes place online and all of these financial complications, as I don't know enough about it to describe it. Why would we not think intellectually that somewhere somebody might have wanted to tank the economy right before the election? Just saying. And that's kind of the way I see it. Steve was going to talk about the president's budget, and his basic description was that it's not the president's budget, which is, you know, spends tons more on military and has lots of spending in there. He said it's not lots of government spending in there, but he says it's the spending in general. He said we are running 13-digit deficits and nobody wants to cut back on anything. And he says due to impending retirement, some 80 million baby boomers, the Titanic is headed toward this fiscal iceberg and neither party wants to do anything about it. And that's basically what he was saying in his article. It was interesting to me to watch last night. Did any of you notice that? You surely did. The big story was that Apple is saying now that they will not be able to meet the goals they had projected for their investors because they manufacture so much of their stuff in China, and they're not going to be able to meet their quotas and what they had promised. And so, point is, there is an article in Zero Hedge this morning that talks about, it's a global supply chain Armageddon, because so many companies, American companies, and we'll say American because we're Americans and we're concerned about our economy, are producing their stuff in China. We are in big trouble because of this virus that's broken out. About 78% of the firms reported warned that their staffing is currently short at the moment, which would prevent the resumption of full production, leading to massive shortages of products in the next several months for Western markets. This Zero Hedge article talks about there are massive quarantines of citizens, industrial hubs being shuttered, transportation networks halted in China. And so these companies are just caught in the crosshairs. And of course, that means products and goods and services that we, mostly goods, and products that we are get from China and we take for granted will be sort of held up in the food chain, not food, but that's metaphorical, not really the food chain. And so it's Zero Hedge predicts it's going to generate a massive shock that could tilt the global economy into recession. These disruptions will cause world trade growth to plunge. Already recession bells are ringing in Japan and Singapore. As it appears, these two countries are on the brink of disaster. Several car factory plants in South Korea were crippled because they could no longer source parts from China. So then Tyler Durden, who's writing this article, makes a comment that really struck me. He said, the world is witnessing the ugly end of globalization. You know, I have never been a fan of globalization, and I've just instinctively... not an expert in economics, said that my dad was a businessman. I think just logical thinking always led me to conclude that love of country had to factor in there somewhere. We are not just, businessmen are not just driven by this, they talked about free trade as though it were the Holy Grail, as though it were like grace and mercy. It was like something that they held high. And many of you are businessmen and you know what I'm talking about. Then that always struck me as odd when I saw us outsourcing jobs and plants and all of this stuff to other countries while American workers were losing their jobs. I realized that out-of-control unions drove a lot of that, and so there's blame on both sides. But I do think that patriotism on both sides has to factor in, meaning love of country. It's like loving your own family and taking care of your own family. And so we are now seeing a serious problem by all these companies outsourcing their stuff to China, and it's going to affect all of us. And I'm just hoping that they will, bottom line, bring their work back home. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Furthermore, you shall select able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain.
My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Joe Biden stood before an audience at the Council on Foreign Relations and bragged about getting Ukrainian Prosecutor General Viktor Shokin fired. The cover story carried by the media was that Shokin was fired in an effort to stamp out corruption. While stumping for Biden in Iowa, former Secretary of State John Kerry was recorded on video saying he, Biden, former President Obama, and his entire administration were working to get Shokin fired to help Ukraine win its revolution against Russia. Did Kerry reveal that the Obama administration fought an unauthorized proxy war against Russia?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The film career of Steve McQueen was the envy of everyone, but it never satisfied him. He finally found true fulfillment at the end of his life. I'm Charles Morris. Learn more about his surprising faith in Jesus on Haven Today. I'm Charles Morris. Join me for a series all week called Never Say Never.
Haven Today, weekday mornings at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. Listen online at AFR.net.
I started reading the Bible in September of 1976 after I got home from that internship. I came across David's Psalm 63, which had an impact on me, and it still does to this day. I began to pray, God, if you're real, show me what you showed him. On December 22nd of 1976, as an old song says, I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on Jesus.
Tune in to The Awakening, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. It's hard to overstate the disarray of today's Democrat Party. An unapologetic socialist is in line to be their nominee, which party leaders know will guarantee a defeat at the ballot box this fall. Right behind him is an unapologetic homosexual who may hold drag queen story hours in the White House. The next candidate supported policing policies in New York that today's Democrats loudly condemn as racist. Their candidates have formed a circular firing squad as they squabble with each other. It reminds me of Israel's battle against the Assyrians, when the Assyrians turned on each other in the middle of the night and killed each other off. The King James Bible says, when they woke up in the morning, behold, they were all dead. The president's enemies are paving the way for a big Trump victory in November.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Jim Banks is a naval officer and veteran of the Afghan War. He's continuing to fight our country's adversaries in his current role as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. Representative Banks has been commendably focused on a largely neglected battlefront, the use Communist China is making of U.S. capital markets to fund its military buildup, domestic repression, and other ominous activities. Notably, he's introduced legislation that would keep our service personnel and civilian government employees from having their pension funds invested in malevolent Chinese companies. Last week, the congressman urged California's governor to fire a Chinese expatriate named Yuben Meng, who is enthused about his commitment to, quote, work for the motherland, unquote, via Beijing's espionage-tainted Thousand Talents program. Meng shouldn't be investing billions of dollars of retired California employees' pensions in corporations tied to the Chinese Communist Party. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Fox News has learned it wasn't just President Trump and Attorney General Barr who were concerned about the severity of the sentence that was recommended for Roger Stone. It was also the man in charge of the case. And he voiced those recommendations long before the president tweeted about it.
Sources familiar with the process tell Fox News the interim U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia was strong-armed by prosecutors into recommending Roger Stone go to jail for 7 to 9 years. According to sources, Tim Shea, who was recently appointed, thought the recommendation was excessive and should be reduced. But when the four line prosecutors in the case threatened to quit, he caved in and signed on to it. The process to revise down the recommendation was already underway at the DOJ when President Trump sent a tweet calling the sentence, quote, horrible and very unfair, making it appear any reduction was in response to his demands. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy says it was a tweet better not sent.
Just because, does the president have a right to tweet about a case? Of course. Just because you can sing, though, doesn't mean you should sing. This is a case where tweeting less would not cause brain damage.
All right, so that's John Roberts. that's Senator from, and I was thinking of something else, so now I can't remember his name, but he is always funny. And I, you know, there's so much emphasis on the president's tweet and this Bob Barr situation, and no question about it, once I kind of lay some things out for you, you will see that it would probably be better if he hadn't. But that's not the story. The story is much greater than that. I'll let John finish his report, then I'll go into some of the details that I think you should know. Let's listen.
The fallout from that tweet continues. The attorney general back on the hot seat after 1,100 former DOJ officials sent a letter strongly condemning what they claim was interference in the fair administration of justice. The letter reading in part, Mr. Barr's actions in doing the president's personal bidding unfortunately speak louder than his words. Those actions and the damage they have done to the Department of Justice's reputation for integrity and the rule of law require Mr. Barr to resign. While the officials who signed onto it worked in both Democratic and Republican administrations, the signatures were gathered by Protect Democracy, a group that has been critical of President Trump's policies and actions. No one expects that Barr would step down, but some Democrats running for president think Barr should at least appear before Congress.
I'd be glad if he resigned. I just don't think that is realistic. I'd also like him to come to the Senate so we can probe him on the role of the president in trying to influence decisions in the Department of Justice.
White House officials continue to defend the tweet.
He didn't have a conversation with Bill Barr about the Roger Stone case. He had a conversation with the whole world.
DOJ officials won't even comment on the revised sentencing recommendations, saying they are deferring to Federal District Judge Amy Berman Jackson to determine what is appropriate.
Stone's sentencing is scheduled for Thursday, but it is unclear at this hour whether that will happen. Judge Jackson has called for a phone hearing tomorrow in court following a petition from Stone's attorney for a retrial, claiming that the jury foreperson in his initial trial was biased against him. Brett?
Yeah, claiming. You think so? The foreman was, we talked about this a lot this week, I think 2 days. The foreman in Stone's jury trial was a Democratic operative. She had run for Congress as a Democrat. She was tweeting like crazy about the Russia collusion story, and yet she claimed when she was interviewed that she wasn't really paying that much attention to it. She basically lied in her interview. And I think as my husband, former federal prosecutor, former Cook County prosecutor before he was in the FBI pointed out, it was the legal team of Stone that really dropped the ball on this. Why in the world did they not notice? One of the other members of the jury was her husband was working on Roger Stone's case at the Justice Department. It really is ridiculous. Well, it's a travesty. It's really horrid. It's not the way, Michael Flynn's being treated, Andrew McCabe's been treated. Just saying. No, Roger Stone, arrested in the early morning, a raid with the FBI knocking FBI, with the CNN reporters called so they could be there to watch. Just horrendous stuff, really horrendous. The judge is, again, as you heard John say, calling for a conference call, and there will be discussions about Roger Stone's asking for a retrial. And he's justified in that. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with that. Plus, the sentence that the four attorneys were recommending is ridiculous. I've heard comparisons. You know, people who commit a crime with a gun don't get the same sentence that Roger Stone was prepared to get based on the recommendation of these four attorneys who quit in a fanfare, hysterical fanfare, and now are causing quite a problem, which is why Bill Barr went on ABC to say that the president's tweets, among many other things he said, the president's tweet was not helpful because he and his team were already reviewing the Stone sentencing recommendations and finding them outrageous, these are my words, and were overriding the four attorneys who ended up resigning from the case because it was a ridiculous amount of time, unwarranted, unjustified. Of course, the judge is the one who has to finally decide. That doesn't mean Roger Stone won't get 9 years. Listen, with the way things are working out now, who's to say he won't get, you know, I think it'll be overturned in a higher court, but it is bizarre. And so now the left is apoplectic. This is their new playing ground. And it's a dangerous one, could I say? And the New York Times, of course, is leading the charge. I'll give you an example. They have this headline that came out. This was on the 12th, so that surprises me, actually. But it says, Trump and Barr are out of control. Trump and Barr are out of control. It's written by a guy named Bob Bauer. He says, the resignation of a Justice Department prosecutor over the sentencing of Roger Stone is a major event. The prosecutor, Jonathan Kravis, apparently concluded that he could not, in good conscience, remain in his post at the department leadership if the department leadership appeared to buckle under White House pressure to abandon a sentencing recommendation in the case of Mr. Stone. The associate of President Trump, who was convicted of obstructing a congressional inquiry into the Russian meddling in the 2016 election. That's the opening paragraph. And it goes on to say, a little bit later down, the government official who resigns for these reasons is paradoxically doing his or her job by leaving it. So Jonathan Kravis, rather than trying, you know, my take on it would be that they are going after Roger Stone for a crime that related to a non-crime, supposedly a cover-up, an obstruction. Remember, there was no Russian collusion. And President Trump was found, he was not in any way colluding, allegedly, after they investigated for 3 years. But they had to get some kind of blood. They had to take somebody. So they got Manafort, and then he went after Stone. And his crimes, alleged crimes, are all related to, you know, Russian collusion. But there was no Russian collusion. But nevertheless, they forged ahead, and then they recommend this 7 to 9 year sentence, which is just outrageous. So the Justice Department powers that be got involved. And according to General Barr and also to the White House, there was no conversation between them. I believe that because if they had a conversation, heaven knows, it would be leaked. You know it would be because nobody can be trusted anywhere these days. So turns out this New York Times article labeled Trump and Barr are out of control, written by Bob Bauer. Well, the part that's not in there is that Bob Barr was a former Obama White House counsel. And Jonathan Kravis, who he praises, and they remember the government official who resigned for these reasons, is paradoxically doing his or her job by leaving it. So Jonathan Kravis, that Bob Barr is writing about so glowingly, was just doing his job. It turns out Jonathan Kravis was a politically appointed lawyer in the Obama's White House. And his boss, Jonathan Kravis, the hero of this piece, his boss was, well, the author of this piece, Bob Bauer. Bob Bauer was the boss of this. He doesn't mention this in the article, so we don't know. But he's praising him. He's just so courageous for stepping aside and doing what's right. And now we know that Bob Barr must now resign because, according to them, he colluded with the president to do something about Roger Stone's draconian sentence. The problem is, ladies and gentlemen, technically, not just technically, but in reality, constitutionally, the president is over the Justice Department. If he wants to pick up the phone and say he's concerned about an undue, out-of-control sentence that is not even, that exceeds the statutes, he can do that. But in this climate, it's gotten ridiculous. The president can't even talk to his attorney general. And I want to remind you, now, John mentioned in this article, this letter, and I mentioned it to you yesterday, also signed by more than 1,100 former Department of Justice officials calling for General William Barr's resignation in the wake of the DOJ's decision to ask for a shorter prison sentence for Roger Stone, as though that is a horrible thing. That's just normal course of duty of the Justice Department, but they want to create an impression, and they're doing a good job of it because they always do. They've got this down pat. So they say such behavior is a grave threat to the fair administration of justice. So let's see what happens. What's happening with General Flynn and with Paul Manafort, who was in solitary confinement, arrested in the who's never done, you know, was not a violent criminal, not a drug lord. The way he was arrested and the way he was treated and incarcerated, put in solitary confinement, that's a fair administration of justice. They had no problem with that. But just making sure that Roger Stone's sentence, when he had a rigged jury, making sure, though, that his sentence is, meets the statute, that's not a fair administration of justice. They say a person should not be given special treatment in a criminal prosecution because they are a close political ally of the president. Should they be given worse treatment because they're a close political ally? I think maybe that's the other part of this that's not in the letter. But the scary part about this, and I alluded to it yesterday, but I want to underscore it, is that they then launch into a battle cry to other members of the Justice Department: be prepared to report future abuses to the Inspector General, the Office of Professional Responsibility, and Congress, to refuse to carry out directives that are inconsistent with your oaths of office, to withdraw from cases that involve such directives or other misconduct, and if necessary, resign and report publicly to the American people the reasons for your resignation. So it's kind of a battle cry for an insurrection at the Justice Department, as though there hasn't already been one. They just haven't been public about it. You know, this is what I told you. Judge, Attorney General Barr is in an island in his own Justice Department with maybe 20 people on his side, maybe, if we're lucky. I know he's appointing more, but the vast majority are not his friends. They are either Clinton appointees, Obama appointees, or never Trumpers. I don't know how many people in that department. You know, there are a lot of support people who support the president, but I can tell you precious few. So they're telling them in this letter, these former employees, to undermine Bill Barr in every way they can. And that's why Bill Barr was so concerned and expressed it in that ABC interview, although he didn't talk about this. But I'm telling you, they're going to make his life miserable. And if they get rid of him, it will be really bad news for this country and for the president. Some other little tidbits of information. The Justice Department, as we have been told before, but I will repeat, overwhelmingly contribute to Democrats. In fact, I'll just give you a quantifying number. In the 2016 election cycle, justice employees gave $438,077 to Hillary Clinton, nearly 20 times what they gave to Donald Trump. So the numbers are based on Federal Election Commission reports. So 20 times, the Justice Department employees gave 20 times more to Hillary Clinton than they did to President Trump, and that should tell you something, shouldn't it? All right, so just a lot of things about justice that I want to throw in here. These may be some random thoughts, but Devin Nunes was on with Fox Business, Lou Dobbs, just a few nights ago. And he said, in regard to the Stone fiasco, he said, remember that two of those attorneys who resigned from the case were on the Mueller team that investigated the president for 3 years. And the other two, they're all Democrats and they're all leftists who hate the president. So just saying. So Nunes is saying this is not going to be the only example of questionable behavior during the federal inquiry called the obstruction of justice trap. There's more to come on this. We think there are other examples of things they did during the Mueller investigation that I think you and your listeners and the American people will be very interested to learn in the coming weeks as we start to unpeel the onion of what the Mueller team was really doing. And then he asks, what the heck were they doing for 2 years? They set up an obstruction of justice trap, and they went after a whole bunch of people that now got sentenced. Some already served their time, and I think all of this has come into question now. And basically, they knew on the second day after they had convened that there was no Russian collusion. I don't know if you knew that part. Yeah, the Inspector General report found out that, you know, they knew right away there was no Russian collusion, and yet they carried on for 3 years. And by the way, 40 FBI agents were assigned to the Mueller task force. 40 FBI agents, not to mention all the other attorneys. So we're going to be hearing a lot more about what they're doing. Why are they so mad at Bill Barr besides the Roger Stone case? Because guess what? According to Fox News, General Barr has tapped a growing number of federal prosecutors across the country to review high-profile Russia probes involving Trump associates, and consider emerging allegations tied to Ukraine in a bold but risky move that comes as he faces mounting criticism and even resignation calls. By the way, Joe Biden has just weighed in over just this morning. It came in my inbox that he should resign. So Fox News reported on Friday that Barr appointed Jeff Jensen, the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Missouri, to review the case of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. And that's not the only one. Let's see. Remember that Michael Flynn tried to withdraw his guilty plea, citing the government's bad faith, vindictiveness, and breach of the plea agreement. And that just came a few days after the Justice Department reversed its course to recommend up to 6 months in prison for General Flynn, alleging he was not fully cooperating and accepting responsibility for his actions. And so, and on it goes. But that's not the only case here. Let's see. Last week, Barr confirmed that the Justice Department was reviewing information about Ukraine coming to the agency from the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, and others. Oh, now you know they're going to be apoplectic over that, because Giuliani's been over there and he's filled with information. Remember, they're threatening Giuliani as well. So now the Justice Department, as of last week, has announced as of last week that they're reviewing the information that Giuliani has gathered. And Barr has tapped U.S. Attorney Scott Brady from Pittsburgh to handle that information. Boy, it's a shame they're putting their names in here, because, you know, the left will make their lives miserable. But let's see. CBS News was the first to report that. They said it's been going on for several weeks. And then, of course, we know that John Durham from Connecticut is reviewing all that happened in the presidential election and since. Also, allegedly investigating, like, you know, John Brennan from the CIA and the CIA's involvement in that. So that's why they're so eager to get him out. He's got to go. They've got to get him out. They've got to throw something at him. They've got to discredit him. They've got to destroy him. And so Bill Barr, now the focus is on him, along with the president. So it's a dangerous time, and I want to be clear about that. And I just also want to say, once again, I've said this before, but there are people in Washington who are fighting for you. They are on the front lines being beaten up. Their families, they're being bankrupted. They're being accused, their reputations. They are in a war. They are in the front lines of this battle. While you and I are enjoying our lives, enjoying our family still as though nothing's happening. But if they should not succeed in this battle, all hell's going to break loose in the country. And I say that to say, please pray for William Barr. Pray for Michael Flynn. Pray for Donald Trump. Pray for Kellyanne Conway. Pray for all the people. Devin Nunes, terrible attack. The members of the Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, man, they are determined. They're trying on your behalf to save this country. They are our champions. And so pray for them and don't take them for granted. And when the election, as you see it coming, engage, the least you can do is inform yourself about candidates and get out there and vote. You know, right now, congressional seats are, people are aspiring to run for Congress. We see what happens when Nancy Pelosi and the left control the House of Representatives. And trust me, it's not going to stop if that crop of people who have just put the president through Hades this last few months and still are not willing to let him go and are still going to be, there's talk of impeaching him again. If they are reelected because you didn't really care, because you were busy, then we will, the consequences are coming our way. So if not for self-preservation, out of gratitude to them for fighting for you, and self-preservation for your family, and also just because you know it's right, don't you, to take responsibility for your part as a citizen. So let's do something. The elections are coming up. Pay attention. By the way, that debate is tomorrow night, Wednesday night in Las Vegas. So all right, Sandy Rios with you in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family
Faith, Family.